When I started college, I had no idea what I wanted to be when I grew up. Maybe that's why it took me 14 years to graduate. Getting an education is what you make it, and that's a lesson I've had to learn the hard way. Today's episode is presented by our partners at Aspire Barber and Beauty Academy, an Aveda concept school providing a one-of-a-kind education experience to aspiring barbers and beauty professionals. With over 52 years of real-world experience, Aspire instructors are equipped with the hands-on knowledge to help you become the stylist you're meant to be.
And eventually you find your people and you find that community. And so you just have to keep looking and be persistent. You'd never know unless you ask. I've had so many opportunities happen because I just randomly asked a question and they're like, yeah, come in and do this thing for me. It's been really amazing.
Welcome to Better Together with Kosti Epifontsev, a podcast on parenting, business, and living life intentionally. We're here every week to bring you thoughtful conversation on making your own path to success, challenging the status quo, and finding all the ways we're better together. Here's your host, Kosti Epifontsev.
Hey, y'all, it's Kosta. Today, I'm here with my guest, Caitlin Dunn, fiber artist and owner of Dunn Spun Studio. Caitlin, you're not just an artist. You're an entrepreneur and an inspiration to everyone that wants to find community around the things they love. Across the internet, you have more than 500,000 followers, and you're able to create art with people all over the world. What inspired you to bring your love of fiber online?
That is, first of all, a very, very kind question. Thank you. It blows my mind thinking about those numbers. Because fiber arts is so community-based, and for a long time, that community was within, you know, walking distance or driving distance or whatever that might be for fiber festivals and clubs. So being able to bring that community online and reach people from all over the world has been really amazing, and it's made fiber accessible to a lot of people who had never even thought about what yarn is until they saw those videos.
So I think you may have answered my question, but when I say fiber, I think of like AT&T fiber.
Right.
I think of like internet. You know?
Or like Cheerios.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Like you need more fiber, Metamucil. Right. Anyway, so, you know, I'm aging myself, you know. Anyway, long story short, what I'm saying though is, what is fiber art and these fiber festivals? Like, talk a little bit about, you know, the community, what it looks like. And also, like, when you say fiber art, what is that?
Yeah, so fiber in general is kind of a big umbrella term. It encompasses spinning and knitting, weaving, crocheting, even paper making is considered a fiber art. And all of these things were once necessity. A spinster, for example, you know, now it kind of has a negative connotation, but it used to be something that was a really important thing that a woman would dedicate her life to making yarn. She might not marry because she spent all of her time spinning yarn for her family and community. And so it was this necessary thing to sustain life. And as you know, the world changes and advances, then we kind of are taking these same techniques and these histories and kind of flipping it on its head and questioning what is art and going from there. So now you can make yarn for the sake of making yarn. It doesn't have to have an end goal. You don't have to make a sweater, which you can. It's fun.
You have a sweater on that you made.
I do indeed.
Very nice.
Sheep to finished product.
I love that. We're going to talk about that more. What I am really, really curious about, though, is you monetize this business, right? So, like, this isn't just a hobby for you. This is what you do full time.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it started with knitting.
Okay.
In the sixth grade, I became addicted. And I've always been involved in fiber arts in some way since then. But it was always a goal of mine to make fiber my full-time job.
Sure.
But it really wasn't until the pandemic happened that my business took off. And that was because it forced me to use social media and to kind of pivot how I was connecting with people. Mm-hmm. I make yarn for a living. Like, technology freaks me out. So, like, all of my tools in my studio are treadle powered or crank powered. So, having to pull out my phone and figure out social media was a really big deal.
Yeah.
But it opened up so many doors for me.
And how do you use social media? Like, for anyone that's not familiar with wool spinning, fiber crafting, and felting, will you walk us through your products, your studio, and what classes you offer online?
Yes. So that's a lot of things. I love to teach. I love to share what I'm passionate about. Fiber arts has changed my life for the better in so many different ways. And so being able to share that with people online has been really empowering. And online also, so typically at a in-person fiber festival, it's usually been older women, retirees. But now being able to use social media, I'm reaching age groups from like, you know, 9 years old and up. So now all of this younger generation is getting interested in these traditions. And so I really love being able to teach on my platform. So usually I'm just in my studio and I turn on my camera while I'm creating something. And if I'm live, then I just kind of step by step talk about what's happening. And I try to answer questions in the comment section and go from there. And then I've since then branched out and created little tutorials to get people started.
So I saw some of the videos. First off, where is your studio at?
I'm in downtown Cookville.
Okay. Yeah. Nice. Is it just like a room full of yarn? And what do you call the raw material before it's spun into yarn?
Yeah. So we just call it fiber.
Okay.
And then from there, you can break it down. This is Corriedale wool, or this is Angora fiber, or alpaca, or whatever. But overall, you can just call everything fluffy. You can call it fiber.
Okay. And I may be getting ahead of myself.
Okay.
Do you sell it in the form of like clothing, or when you make it, like where do you sell it?
I try to offer something at every stage of the process.
Okay.
So as often as I can, I work with local farmers and I go on a shearing day and they get their little haircuts.
The sheep. Yes.
The sheep nice. Get their little haircuts. That's one big question people ask me on the internet is, does this hurt them? Is this bad for them? But just like you and I have to get our haircut, sheep need their haircut. It's actually not good for them if they don't get their haircut. So I go and get their fleece, and then I get rid of all the really gross stuff that nobody else wants to touch. And then from there, I offer the product at all different stages. So a needle felter or a spinner would buy the wool, maybe just cleaned and dyed, or clean, dyed, and combed with some sparkle because glitter is mandatory.
Right.
Or clean, dyed, added in with other fibers and spun, and then a knitter would buy the yarn. All the way to a finished product. So I try to offer something at every stage.
Do you sell it online?
I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
And primarily that's where most of your market is through like your online website or Shopify or something?
Yeah, I have an Etsy shop. And
okay.
Then
nice.
I'm also a part of different online fiber festivals. So like through Facebook and things like that.
Not to get like too much into the weeds about your business, but do you offer such a niche product that you don't have to compete with like other countries that produce, you know, these types of materials? Or do you have to compete with pretty much everybody that's producing this at a lower cost potentially?
So that's the beautiful thing about fiber arts is it is a community.
Nice.
And so I always say community over competition.
Mm-hmm.
And so I might be in a fiber festival with hundreds of other bat makers, for example. So a bat is the wool once it's been carded and blended together. So that's what I'm most known for are my sparkly, colorful bats. And I might be in the same room with hundreds of other bat makers, but we all have a different take on our mm-hmm. colors. The fibers are coming from different farms. It's just like a painting, like each person's brushstroke is going to be a little bit different.
Yeah.
So I buy other bats from other makers and other makers buy from me, and we just kind of all support each other.
I love that. Okay, so where should the beginner fiber crafter start and what will we need?
Yes, so if you want to dip your toes in, I highly recommend starting with a drop spindle. Spinning is my all-time favorite part of fiber, and there's a lot of little things you can get into, but spinning is just so comfy and cozy. And a spindle is really nice because you don't have the huge overhead expense of a spinning wheel, and it's small, so you can take it everywhere with you. I took mine to Ireland. But you could also be waiting in line at the coffee shop making some yarn. And so you just need a drop spindle and some fluff and you're ready to go. You could even just, I mean, before there were spindles, there were sticks. And that was how they would make yarn.
Okay. So when I'm picturing this, right, you said like you learned how to crochet, knit. I'm sorry, you learned how to knit whenever you were a kid. And so I'm picturing kindergarten, the little, I mean, I don't even know if they do this in art class anymore, honestly. So like the little oval.
Yeah.
And you had to like, the little you had to knit room. Out like a spider, right? And then you brought it home and your parents put it up. I mean, I'm sure my parents probably put it up for a very short period of time. I'm assuming that's what you're talking about when you say knitting, right? Or did you learn like, what's the thing with like the sticks where they sit there and they...
So two needles is knitting.
Okay.
One hook is crochet.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I learned with the two needles.
Got it.
And I was so tight of a knitter when I first started learning. I had so much anxiety. You couldn't even move the stitches across the needle. They were so tight. And I've broken needles and crochet hooks before.
That's incredible.
I'm much looser now.
Good.
But I started with just the two sticks, two needles.
Wow. So you mentioned Ireland.
Yes.
And, you know, we got to obviously give the tagline, what's the crack? For anybody that doesn't understand what that saying means, can you tell us what it means? What's the crack? What is the crack?
What is the crack? So crack could mean fun. It could mean if someone has the crack, that means they're a cool person. They're kind of funny. They've got the jokes. An event could have crack, you know, come and enjoy the crack.
Not literally, folks.
Right. Right. It's just like a good time. You can say, what's the crack? Like, what's happening?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that. And are your parents from Ireland or family from Ireland?
I have Irish heritage, but it's a few generations back.
Let me ask you this. How hard was it to build a network of farmers when you were like, hey, I want to come shave your sheep, right?
Well, I don't shear.
Oh, okay. Does somebody else shear?
That's a whole other art form.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the farmer shears and you just pick up the, or do you hire somebody to shear?
So some farmers can shear themselves and then other farmers will hire a shearing company to come and shear the sheep. Because like I said, that's a whole other thing.
Yeah. It's not like shaving your head,
right? Sheep can be a little bit fragile.
Yeah.
And so you need to be very gentle with them. You have to have a certain type of skill and strength to be able to shear a sheep.
Have you ever tried it?
No.
Okay.
I'm too much of a weakling.
I mean, I would be terrified, honestly. Like any type of, I'm afraid of just farm animals in general.
Oh.
So yeah, I'm not a big horse guy. I'm not a big cow guy. I mean, if they're behind a cage.
Yeah.
And I can just pet their snout, then I'm okay with it.
Well, I think you'd like alpacas because they are so sweet and they hum to communicate. And so if you go on a shearing day, you just hear all these little hums everywhere because they're telling each other about what's going on.
Are they like llamas?
So they're in the camelid family.
Okay.
So yeah, they're kind of like llamas, but they're smaller and they usually have a calmer temperament. Llamas are really good. Fun fact. There's something called a guard llama. So instead of having a guard dog for your flock, you can get a llama because they're big and they're fearless and they will just charge at anything that comes into the farm. And even if they physically couldn't deal with the animal, they're just ferocity and charging towards them. It scares the prey away.
I mean, we may need to get one. So, you know, I'm sure the audience wants to hear this, but our dog of 14 years, we had to put him down.
Oh, I'm
yeah.
So sorry.
His name was Arnold. And Arnold was the richest dog in all of Putnam County. So Arnold had our property management company named after him, Arnold Gray Properties. Obviously, Arnold was gray. He was this big old Weimaraner Great Pyrenees mix.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. And he's a great dog. He just got old and had a stroke and had some cancer. And so, but the reason why I'm bringing it up is because right before we started this podcast, Jessica sent me a picture of white Labrador Retriever puppies.
Oh.
She said there's two available. And I'm thinking to myself, I thought we said we weren't going to get another dog.
Oh.
And now we might be right back in the pocket with a puppy. And kids, the kids will die. Like if a little puppy dog comes in, like Caroline will. You ever seen Animaniacs?
Yes.
You remember Elmira?
Yes.
Squeezes them?
Yeah.
We got to keep her away. We got to keep the dogs away from the girls. Anyway, so I'll report back if we end up getting one. We'll see.
You can get a guard llama instead.
Yes.
She can't squeeze that one too hard.
Right. And she could ride it.
Yes, she could.
And they spit at people.
Yeah. I mean, if they feel threatened.
They'll spit at you?
Yeah. Just if you feel threatened. They feel threatened.
I've only done that a handful of times.
Spit at people?
Yeah, but not on. Usually, I usually reserve that for... I've grown up a lot.
Okay.
Yeah. After you committed to this path, how long did it take you to actually make a consistent income?
A long time. Yeah, it's not an overnight thing. A lot of people have reached out to me since finding me on social media, and they're like inspired to try and create a fiber arts business. And I want to be encouraging, but I do try to let them know it does take time. And it's such a community-based product, and right. Fiber can, if it seems too good to be true in price, it probably is.
Mm.
It does take a long time, but just making friends in the community and being consistent online is really helpful.
Here at Better Together, we want to challenge the status quo, create new ideas, and never take "that's the way we've always done things" for an answer. At Aspire Barber and Beauty Academy, their instructors feel the exact same way. The beauty industry is changing every day, and if you're going to a school that's only concerned with you passing the state boards, you'll never make it behind the chair. From the owners of Lock Salon and Spa, Aspire Barber and Beauty Academy was created to redefine education in the beauty industry and give future stylists, barbers, and beauty professionals the tools they actually need to succeed. Schedule your tour today at aspirebarberandbeauty.com.
What's the difference between synthetic fiber and the type of fiber that you make?
Well, protein fiber would be like sheep, alpaca, anything that comes from a mammal. It's self-sustainable because they can grow it and mm-hmm. they get their little haircuts.
Right.
It's a lot warmer than a synthetic fiber. It breathes a lot better. Sheep wool does this really cool thing where it holds onto moisture. And so when it gets hot, it'll release the moisture to cool you off. So that's why like wool socks for hikers is really a big deal, because you can wear them in the heat or in the cold, because in the heat, it'll release that moisture that holds onto.
I have always wondered that. I was like, why in the world are you going to wear wool socks in the middle of summer when you're going hiking? Like, if anything, I'm going to wear no socks.
Yeah. You know? And like Uggs were, I think, originally created for like surfers. Because wool helps you regulate your body temperature.
Wow.
Because that's what it does for the sheep.
Yeah. So of the synthetic, and I've got a lot of questions on this topic. So of the synthetic wool market relative to the protein fiber market, mm-hmm. what's the percentages? Like, is it 75% synthetic, 25% protein, or is it like 80% synthetic, 20% protein?
Well, where are we talking? Because if we're talking about like...
like the U.S. consumer market.
Oh, I'm sure it's, I don't know percentages, but I'm pretty sure a lot of it's synthetic.
Yeah.
And there's a lot, in Tennessee, there's a lot more cotton. I'm from Minneapolis, and there's a lot more wool sweaters in the Goodwills in Minneapolis than there are in Tennessee.
Yeah.
So cotton and mixed with acrylic is usually what people are seeing in stores nowadays.
If they're not shaving sheep, how are they getting synthetic wool?
You know, I know more about sheep than I do about plastic.
Hey, totally understood. Makes perfect sense. And see, guys, that's what y'all have to remember. When they say synthetic wool, it's actually plastic.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You don't want to be wearing plastic around. So get the good stuff. Get the real stuff.
Yeah.
All right. So obviously now you're very successful. You've made it and you're starting to build your brand into something that's going to be around for a very, very long time.
Hope so.
But as you were getting to this point... you know, I mean, you're from Minneapolis. You went to Tech here?
No. My grandparents retired in Crossville.
Nice.
So close to family.
Nice. And so just curious, when did you decide to leave Crossville and move to Cookeville? Or did you decide to move to Cookeville right off the bat?
Well, when we first moved to Tennessee, I was in high school and it wasn't a super fun experience leaving all my friends and everything. And going from Minneapolis to Crossville was a big culture shock.
Yeah.
So... immediately, I was trying to find other people. And Crossville is more of a retirement community. But I actually ended up spending almost every single day in the yarn store in Crossville. And all of those women kind of like adopted me. And I would show up to the yarn store and there would just be bags of yarn that were left anonymously for me. So I would have something to knit because I was just there all the time. But I just kind of slowly worked my way over to Cookeville.
Okay. So you're, you know, you obviously didn't have a store at the time.
Right.
You didn't have a studio. And, you know, you were kind of doing this part-time, or was it a hobby?
Or more hobby.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so what were you doing while this was a hobby? And when did you know that it was time to make that switch and become a small business owner?
It was kind of an accident.
Okay.
So I was in college and my mom had this little like refurbished store and we called it Done Again. And when I was in school, I got really sick and I couldn't get better. And I found out years later I have a chronic illness, but at the time we didn't know that. And I remember being stressed and I came home for the weekend and my mom was just like, don't go back to school tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Just take the day off. And I was like, if I take the day off, they say never come back. And she said, don't go back. And I was like, that's an option. And she's like, yeah, you don't have to go back. And so I quit art school.
Wow.
And I did end up going back and just getting my associate's degree because sure. I was pretty close. And then I just started teaching classes in the back of my mom's shop. And I just kind of eventually gradually started taking over more and more and more of her space. And she's like, I guess this is yours now. And then we switched the name to Dunspun.
And I love it.
Yeah, the rest is
history.
That's
how it worked out. I love that. I love it. Yeah. And I mean, you know, at the end of the day, like if you think of some of the most famous artists, like Vincent van Gogh mm-hmm. and Picasso and Monet, all of the ones that were represented in the movie Titanic. I mean, none of them went to art school, right?
Yeah.
Look at that. It was uber successful.
Yeah. Right?
So we're not going to talk about art school too much because we'll go down a rabbit hole that we'll never be able to climb out of. What's your advice to artists that are trying to make a living with their art, especially somewhere like Cookeville?
Yeah. So I say this and I don't really have it, but you have to have thick skin.
Okay.
And you have to remind yourself, not everyone is your customer. That was a big deal for me because I started selling at like craft fairs and people would come up and I would spend my whole time explaining the price of my yarn instead mm-hmm. of selling it.
Mm-hmm.
And my feelings would get hurt, honestly. And I was like, why don't they understand? And then I realized they just weren't my customer.
Right.
And eventually you find your people and you find that community. And so you just have to keep looking and be persistent. You'd never know unless you ask. I've had so many opportunities happen because I just randomly asked a question and they're like, yeah, come in and do this thing for me. It's been really amazing. So
yeah.
Ask questions, build community if you can't find it, and keep going.
So Bree Flora, she said the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And she was actually the day that we were recording her podcast. This was, I think, last year, maybe even the year before. She was actually going to a trade show. Like literally as soon as she was finishing up recording with us, she was going to go. And she said the exact same thing. She said, you know, it's hard because, you know, you spend a lot of time designing these products, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, they don't see the amount of hours, the right. blood, sweat, and tears, so to speak, that went into the product. So, you know, believe me, I get it. And I have to tell myself all the time, like, okay, they may not know what's happening behind the scenes. So let's just make sure that the finished product is perfect. And I'll find the right person that's going to see it and say, you know what? I find value in that.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
So do you sell them online?
Yeah. So mostly online. Usually it's a video on social media that gets attention. And then people send me private messages and ask about products and how to get started. And then I send them my links to the tutorials to see if that's something they're interested in before they invest.
Is it just the yarn or the clothes? Like, what is it that you sell?
So mostly they're bats. And so I primarily cater to people who want to make their own yarn, which is very niche.
Wait. Bats. I'm thinking bats, like
right.
flying bats. They're not flying
no.
bats? Okay. I thought you specialized in bats. I was
no.
like, oh, you make custom bats. That's cool, man. No. Wait, so this is a totally, okay,
totally
we gotta,
different thing.
We're going to we gotta unpack that. What is
yeah.
a bat?
So it's spelled B-A-T-T.
Okay.
And it is a way of processing fiber for it then to be spun into yarn. So usually by the time it becomes a bat, it's been shorn off the sheep, skirted, which means you get rid of the gross stuff.
Okay.
Then it has to be cleaned. And if it's wool, it has lanolin. So you need to melt the lanolin. The water has to be hot enough, all the things. Then you dye the wool, and then you bring it to your drum carder, which kind of looks like a medieval torture device. Lots of little spikes and nails, okay. And mine happens to be hand cranked, and it combs the wool. And then when it comes off, it's this big, fluffy, pillowy beautifulness that we call a bat.
Yeah. And they can see all of this on Instagram.
Yeah. They can see all of my videos, Instagram, Facebook.
Wow. That's so cool. So I know you said that you were allergic to everything when we were talking before yeah. this. So did that play at all into, because I mean, a lot of people are allergic to wool, but is it synthetic fiber?
That is a pet peeve of mine.
Oh, okay.
And please, I'm going to
elaborate.
I might make some people upset with this, but the chemical makeup of wool and human hair is the same. So there are the special people who might actually legitimately be allergic to wool, but typically they're allergic to lanolin, which is the grease that the sheep produce to protect their fiber.
Mm.
Now, if they're allergic to lanolin, they're probably also allergic to a lot of lotions, because we put lanolin in lotion because it's really, really good for your skin. Whenever I clean a fleece, my hands are beautiful because of all of the lanolin. But typically when people say they're allergic to wool, it's really just they're sensitive to the texture of wool. And so they just haven't been exposed to it enough as a child. And so now they've become hypersensitive.
And it's not necessarily the chemicals that are in synthetic wool versus protein.
No, it's usually just a sensitivity.
Okay. I will say the one thing, it's going to make me cringe thinking about it. You know, like you have these things that you just can't yes. think about because it like gives you the skeeves.
Yes.
I don't know. I was born in Russia. So just like in Minneapolis, we have a lot of wool sweaters because yes. it's cold, right? Out of necessity, of course.
Yes.
When you bite down on a wool sweater and you... you move your teeth back and forth and it makes that squeaking sound. Oh my gosh, like that just, everything just stands up.
Now, are you sure that was wool? It wasn't acrylic?
I mean, it was in a third world. So I don't even think
we might have to do a burn test.
You know, you're probably right. So how do we tell if somebody, I mean, obviously you can look at the label, but what is the main difference between real wool and synthetic?
Okay, so I always joke, let's do a burn test, but you legitimately can. And I did it in the yarn store once and it was awesome. But when you burn a strand of acrylic yarn, mm-hmm. it melts. It's going to bead up and it's going to melt.
Okay.
When you burn a strand of wool yarn, it is going to smell like burning hair because that's what it is. And it's going to turn more to ash.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why they recommend not using acrylic for baby blankets, because if they get too close to a flame yeah. or a radiator, it will melt.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
What's the biggest lesson that you've learned from growing a business online?
I think we mentioned it earlier, but just the kind of having tough skin and mm-hmm. not getting attached to the numbers. Because like social media was so foreign to me, technology is so foreign to me. Once I started seeing those numbers appear, something happens to our brain
yeah.
and it can really mess with you. And so trying to separate your business and your self-worth with those numbers is really important. And knowing that it's quality over quantity, you know, just because one video might get millions of views doesn't necessarily mean you're going to boom in sales. But if the right person sees a small video that doesn't go anywhere, you will sell your product. And it's, I think, really being authentically yourself is really mm-hmm. important too, especially in like video form content. People can tell when you're putting on a show, or like, I make silly videos. So there's definitely like a time and a place for some silliness.
Sure.
But I feel like that's also like authentically me. I'm just goofy and cringy. And
yeah.
But fiber is so community based and so history based. And people want the story behind the art and behind the product. Knowing that this wool came from Heidi, the sheep from Georgia, is yeah. a really cool thing. And so just being authentic with yourself and your product and open about it, I think is really important.
It's awesome. So we always like to end the show on a high note. Who is someone that makes you better when you're together?
Okay. I'm going to have to shout out my little apprentice, Abigail. She is 12 years old, and I met her at a fiber camp that I was doing for children over the summer, and we just hit it off. She was like my soul sister. And ever since then, she's helped me in the studio. She's gone with me to fiber festivals, and she is just a dream. I really feel like God brought us both together at just the right moment, and I'm very, very grateful for little Abigail.
Thank you to our partners at Aspire Barber and Beauty Academy for presenting this episode. Aspire is an Aveda concept school providing a one-of-a-kind education experience to aspiring barbers and beauty professionals. Created by the owners of Lock Salon and Spa, Aspire's instructors bring over 52 years of real-world experience, equipping students with the hands-on knowledge to help you become the stylist you're meant to be. New classes are now enrolling. Visit AspireBarberAndBeauty.com.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Better Together with Kosta Yepafontsev. If you've enjoyed listening and you want to hear more, make sure you subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Leave us a review, or better yet, share this episode with a friend. Today's episode was written and produced by Morgan Franklin. Post-production, mixing, and editing by Mike Franklin. Want to know more about Kosta? Visit us at KostaYepafontsev.com. We're better together. We'd like to remind our listeners that the views and opinions expressed during this episode are those of the individual speakers and do not necessarily represent or reflect the official policy or position of this show, its producers, or any related entities or advertisers. While our discussions may touch on various topics of interest, please note that the content is intended to inspire thought-provoking dialogue and should not be used for a substitute for professional advice. Specifically, nothing heard on this podcast should be construed as financial, legal, medical, or any other kind of professional advice. We encourage our listeners to consult with a professional in these areas for guidance tailored to their specific circumstances.